Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is John Campbell, who's the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies, career foreign service officer, and former ambassador to Nigeria. Previously, he was political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections. And his book, Nigeria Dancing on the Brink, is now in its second edition. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Campbell.
Thank you.
And the reports out of Nigeria that the head of the central bank has been ousted have been somewhat facile because they say because of $20 billion that are missing. But it's pretty clear that the central banker who just got railroaded, he's the whistleblower, isn't he? I mean, he's saying that $20 billion of oil revenues at the rate of about $1 billion a month have disappeared.
That's correct. That is exactly what he is saying. And this has provoked a good deal of anger, both from the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation, a state-owned corporation that is involved in oil production, and also the Office of the President of Nigeria, Goodluck Jonathan.
So the oil company itself, the state-owned oil company, apparently is fairly opaque in its accounting. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. It's extremely opaque in its accounting, and public finance in general in Nigeria is opaque. Lamido Sanusi has an excellent reputation in the international financial community because of banking reforms that he has introduced over the past several years. And, in fact, he has been named Central Banker of the Year twice by a UK publication that is, in fact, owned by the Financial Times.
The Banker magazine.
Yes.
So I think we can safely say he's the good guy in this, right?
I think we can, yes.
So who are the bad guys?
Well, the bad guys, from my perspective, it's not so much that they're bad guys, as rather their behavior is perplexing. Sanusi has been, quote, suspended, unquote, because as part of an effort to guarantee the independence of the central bank, the governor can only be removed by the Senate. There are not the votes there to remove him, and beyond that, the Senate could remove him only for cause, and no real cause has been shown. So he's been suspended until his term runs out in June. Not clear to me that suspension is legal, and Sanusi himself has said that he will contest it in the courts. Sanusi, operating, I think, from an important point of principle, maintains that what is really important here is that the independence of the central bank be maintained, that, in other words, the central bank not be subject to political interference. And that's why he's going to court in order to try to overturn his suspension.
But it would seem, though, that whistleblowers do not get very far in Nigeria, particularly when they try to tackle corruption. In 2007, Nuhu Ribadu was suspended as the head of the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission for trying to do his job. It sounds like the central banker is also trying to do his job, or at least asking where has the money gone. And this is the people's money, right? $20 billion.
It certainly seems to me that it's that way, that what Lamido Sanusi was doing is what the governor of the central bank ought to be doing, calling to the president's attention the fact that there's $20 billion that's not accounted for. And yes, it's perfectly true that whistleblowers, people who take on corruption in Nigeria, often do not fare well. There is speculation, and I caution that it is speculation, but there's speculation on the street in Nigeria that Sanusi may well make further revelations about corruption that he has uncovered.
Again, I'm speaking with John Campbell, who's the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies, career Foreign Service officer and former ambassador to Nigeria. He was political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections, and his book, Nigeria Dancing on the Brink, is now in its second edition. So getting back to the state-owned oil company and its opacity in terms of its finances and in terms of who really is in charge, and if all this money is sort of trickling out of the oil sector, clearly there are vested interests. So do we know who these vested interests are that are opposed to the central banker shedding some light on what they're up to?
No, we don't know them. We don't know them by name. But as you say, it would appear highly likely that very senior personalities in Nigeria are involved either directly or indirectly.
And how does this? How do you account in terms of the nation's patrimony here, in terms of money that comes in from its major export, oil? And it's one of the world's biggest exporters of oil. Do we really know how much is exported per year? I mean, you could be able to calculate it if you knew. And I take it there's also this phenomenon going on in Nigeria of, you know, bootleg oil, oil being stolen, siphoned off, and sold on the black market. So can you sort of walk us through the economics of oil production in...
What you're saying is correct. And Sanusi himself has said publicly that it's not really known exactly how much of Nigeria's oil is produced in any given month, and how much of it is sold, and how much of it is stolen. None of these figures are known with any kind of precision. We normally say that Nigeria is at present producing a bit more than a million barrels of oil a day. That's a lot of money. And oil revenue amounts to more than 90% of Nigeria's foreign exchange and more than 70% of the government's total revenue. So you're talking about something that's a big deal.
Well, though, you would think that the foreign oil buyers, and Shell, I believe, is a big player there, they would at least have the accounting, or do they prefer to, you know, if they are they involved in also buying black market oil?
I don't think any of the oil majors are involved in buying black market oil. The damage to their reputation would be too great.
But why can't we get figures from them then?
Well, the issue is considerably more complicated than that. The oil is produced in either by joint venture or by joint agreement between the international oil companies and the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation. This means that Shell can, for example, or any of the other major oil companies, can tell you precisely how much they produce, but they can't tell you how much is produced across the board. And there are many domestic oil producers as well.
I see. Well, it turns out there that Sanusi's original letter that was leaked in December, he said that $50 billion in oil revenues is missing in a pack.
Well, he did indeed. And as far as I can tell, and I must say the whole matter is extremely opaque, but as far as I can tell, $30 billion of that has been found and accounted for, but that still leaves $20 billion.
I see. So tell us about the president then. Good luck, Jonathan. He is a protege of the former president who was notoriously corrupt, was he not?
He was a protege of General Olusegun Obasanjo.
Right.
And though they have since broken, former President Obasanjo has been bitterly critical of President Goodluck Jonathan's apparent ambitions to run for re-election in 2015.
Right.
I say apparent because, in fact, while he is behaving as though he's going to run, he hasn't, in fact, announced that he's going to do so.
I see. Well, perhaps I'm confusing Obasanjo with his predecessor, General Sani Abacha, who was notoriously corrupt.
He was indeed notoriously corrupt.
I believe they found in one of his many palaces, they broke down a wall and found a hidden room full of currency.
Don't know specifically. There are lots and lots of stories like that on the street. But the fact remains, he was indeed notoriously corrupt, and some of the funds that he looted, some, have been recovered, but only some.
Mm-hmm. And this, of course, is a country undergoing a civil war of sorts, is it not? With this insurgency called Boko Haram, the insurgency from the north, and it does seem that, you know, the Nigerian military recently suggested that they'd routed Boko Haram, and then the next day almost Boko Haram set off a bunch of suicide bombs to make it clear that they haven't gone away.
That's correct. I myself treat with extreme skepticism Nigerian military claims that they are bringing the situation in the north under control. There are also two other hot spots that I think are worth mentioning. The first is in the middle of the country, where there is considerable ethnic and religious conflict, basically between Fulani herdsmen who are Muslim and Christian Barone farmers. That can flare up at any time, and the government has been remarkably unsuccessful in controlling it. And then in the oil patch itself, which is where Jonathan comes from, certain militant leaders there have threatened mayhem if Jonathan is either prevented from running for the presidency or if he does run and is defeated. So you've got three areas that you've got to watch from a security perspective.
But in the Delta itself, where all the oil comes from, isn't there a group called MEND, a rebel group?
There is indeed. And there was an amnesty established in 2009 by Jonathan's predecessor and continued by Jonathan. And some of the leaders of MEND have been incorporated into Jonathan's administration.
Well, I've seen pictures of these guys with bandoliers of machine gun bullets and flying, you know, tooling around in speedboats with heavy machine guns.
Right.
Apparently. I mean, if those guys have made their way into government, that's quite a transition.
Isn't it?
So if I were a Nigerian, I think I'd be pretty disgusted with my government, wouldn't you? I mean,
well, and a great many of them are, and they're not shy about saying so.
Right.
Nigeria has virtually absolute freedom of speech, and there is lots and lots of criticism of governance writ large in Nigeria right now.
But I take it you can, you know, grouse about it, but you can't do anything about it? Is that the situation?
Well, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's very difficult to change fundamentally the political economy of a country. And, of course, they're looking towards national elections literally a year from now, mid-February of 2015. Run-ups to elections in Nigeria are often periods of instability and considerable violence.
So, and that's on top of the ongoing violence in this Muslim-Christian divide.
That's right. Now, but it may be related. In other words, you can have violence cross over from being essentially political to igniting ethnic and religious conflicts.
So what is the connection then with this insurgency from Boko Haram? I mean, they seem to be antediluvian, aren't they? They're against education. What is their agenda?
Well, first of all, we have to be careful about using the word Boko Haram to describe what is clearly a highly diffuse and multifaceted sort of grassroots insurrection against the Nigerian political economy. One part of it, led by Abubakar Shekau and consisting of the followers of a charismatic Islamic preacher who was murdered by the police, one part of it, properly speaking, is Boko Haram. Mm-hmm. But there are other groups that are so labeled and share the kind of Islamic jihadist vocabulary that Boko Haram uses. It's difficult, though, to sort out what is political, what is criminal, what is religious about this insurrection. And the particular causes of it are often intensely local. In other words, it will vary from village to village.
But is it, at the end of the day, do you have a divide between a largely Christian South and a Muslim North? Is that,
yes.
And that's not reconcilable, that divide?
It is reconcilable, and through most of Nigeria's history, it has been reconciled. One of the devices for doing it was so-called power alternation, or zoning. That was where the presidency would alternate between the Christian South and the Muslim North. But what Jonathan did was he set aside that that general approach when he ran for the presidency in 2011, and it was generally regarded as the Muslim North's turn.
I see. So they feel alienated at the moment, and that gives a fertile field for the Boko Haram types, I take it.
That's exactly right. And fertile field is the right way to put it, because we're talking about something which is diffuse and local, and it is difficult to apply systematic categories to it.
So just in closing then, John Campbell, getting back to the oil issue and the missing, it started out with 50 billion and they found apparently 30 billion, but there's still 20 billion missing from the state oil company. And this is only over a period of what, wasn't the bleeding at the rate of a billion a month?
I think that's what I have in mind, though I would have to verify
right.
that.
But so presumably this could have gone back for decades, right? The bleeding?
Could have, but I think it's unlikely that it did. We're talking enormous amounts of money, and I don't think you'd have sums that large disappear over a decade.
Mm-hmm. Well, but during Abacha's period, he just took it all, right?
I mean,
took,
he did indeed. Yes.
Yeah. So since his tenure with the mentor of Goodluck Jonathan, he was relatively clean, was he? Obasanjo?
Obasanjo provided governance that was considerably more skillful than that of either Abacha or of Jonathan. His administration worked much better. You didn't have an insurrection in the north. You didn't. He managed to get the ethnic conflict in the Middle Belt under some kind of control. Not so much in the Delta. He wasn't particularly successful there. But the level of governance was considerably stronger under Obasanjo than it is now.
Well, I just come across the figures now. Earlier this month, Mr. Sanusi, the central banker, has just been eased out or suspended or fired, or we're not quite sure. Certainly not, it's not been done legally. He told a Senate committee that out of the $67 billion in oil sold between January of 2012 and July of 2013, $20 billion had not been accounted for. So that gives us an idea of the kind of revenues. That's a huge chunk. That's over 30%.
That's a huge chunk, and it's a huge chunk of revenue in an extremely poor country.
Well, I must say, it is a bit disgusting, isn't it?
Discouraging.
Discouraging. Okay, we'll settle on that. And I thank you for joining us, John Campbell.
Thank you very much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with John Campbell, who's a Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies, a career Foreign Service officer and former ambassador to Nigeria. He was political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections, and his book, Nigeria, Dancing on the Brink, is now in its second edition. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back looking into the president's decision to drop the chain CPI Social Security cuts from his 2015 budget.